You're listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. I'm your host, Dan Joseph, and once a month we bring you a mix of conversations and musical selections by artists featured on the Musical Ecology series in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I invite you to visit our website for more information on our artists and upcoming events at musicalecologies.net. For tonight's program, we'll revisit our event with electronic musician and multimedia artist Blevin Blechtum on Thursday, October 8th. Currently based in Providence, Rhode Island, and best known as one half of the groundbreaking duo Blechtum from Blechtum, Blevin presented a new set of audiovisual pieces entitled Deviant Sonic Parlor Tricks. We began the evening with a conversation about her work and background, and we'll start our program tonight right there at the Old Stone House in Park Slope, Brooklyn. To join us, welcome Blevin.
Thank you.
And Blevin Blechtum, aka Bevin Kelly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So maybe that's a good place to start, actually. Tell me about the alias and how it came about. I mean, I know something about the connection, but maybe you could explain a little bit.
Sure. It's circuitous and confusing, purposefully so. So it originated when I was playing with Kristen Erickson and was asked to play a Halloween show. We had just met and we're both at Mills, just starting our masters. And so we played together. We needed a name. She was going as Dr. Spectum, and I was Bevin, and her nickname for me was Blevin, so we combined them, and our band together is called Blechtum from Blechtum, which is the entity from the domain, because we couldn't pick one or the other spelling, so we used both. And then solo, when we started doing solo things, she became Kevin Blechtum, and I became Blevin Blechtum, and we each took a spelling. So the band name was supposed to be androgynous and vague and confusing and maybe a little disgusting, and so gist of it. And the joke band is always the name that you get stuck with, because the joke band becomes the
joke band,
the fun band that everyone wants more of, even though it's not really a joke, it's kind of a joke.
All right, well, I want to talk more about Blechtum from Blechtum a little bit, but first though I want to get up to date on what you're up to now. I mean, this is 2015.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
And you're in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yes.
Is where you're living now.
Yeah, so I went from Oakland to Providence, did a PhD at Brown University in multimedia and computer music, and just finished that last May, and I am. So I guess I added a lot of multimedia to what originally was just a compositional practice, if you can call it that, and had done some video and I guess you would say multimedia performance art stuff with Kristen, but started doing more variety and more authoring of all the elements myself at Brown, so especially video, which I'm trying some new stuff tonight. So I'm done with school now, and I'm just freelancing. I do sound for Hasbro Toys, and I just finished some theater sound for Boston Theater Company. So I do a smattering of sound for theater as well, mostly in Boston, so and in Providence.
Great. So at Brown, so I'm sorry. Tell me again what your program was. It was electronic music.
Oh, so the program itself is called Multimedia and Electronic Music Experiments. Which can abbreviate to MEME, and
MEME, right? That's the program, right?
Yeah, MEME is the program. So it's the smallest program. It's been around for about 12 years now, I think, as an official PhD program. It has a lot of overlap with RISD, digital media, and other things going on in Providence that are electronic music related. So.
I see. And so you got a little deeper into the video.
And a little instrument building and a little theatrical stuff. I'm actually working with my brother on theatrical music-based radio plays now. Did I send you that?
You did. I checked some of them out. It sounds like a great direction
It's fun. So it's live electronics and strings and voices and, right. And usually science fiction.
And some kind of a story or plot.
Yeah, some kind of adaptation.
Right,
a little more linear and plot-driven and less abstract. But hopefully with a very solid musical core from which all the stuff flows.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of project did you when it all came together at Brown, with the video and the sound, what was kind of the focal point?
The dissertation stuff was...
Or just how your work developed during
those years. Yeah, so that was actually I did a concert that had, the first act was me solo with the controller controlling Max MSP stuff as well as some Ableton Live stuff, and sort of an ARM-based, really pretty basic controller, but something I'd built while there. And then the second section was the first radio play that I did with my brother, staged live in 9 channels, a really nice black box with the recorded voice characters up on, like, sort of, you know, up speakers, and the rest of the electronics are around the room, violin, viola, and 2 spoken voices as well. So that was the sort of centerpiece of it. Mm-hmm. That had like a sort of sculptural object puppety-ish thing, I would call you, for the baby that's born into the wrong dimension and appears as a blue pyramid, and video as well, like minimal sort of surrounding video. So that was my main big multimedia piece. Yes. And the last one was actually stuff from a record that I released in conjunction with the dissertation, because I really wanted to release something again, because I hadn't done that. I thought I could continue to juggle everything on top of school, and I kind of slipped and didn't put anything out for about 5 years, so it felt good to have that as part of that whole, like, finishing school package.
What record was that? I
mean, that was Emblem Album on Agoo, which is a New York label, actually. Alec Dartley's label.
Agoo.
Two A's, 2 O's. And, so it was some of that, and I might play a little bit of material that originated from that tonight, too.
So you mentioned violin. Now I want to learn a little bit more. Now I know you were, when I first met you, you were playing violin, right?
Yeah, I did my first.
This was like sometime in the late 90s, right?
Yeah.
Do you still have a violin thing going?
I still play a little bit. Yeah, I played for a long time. I was, pushed to be a violinist, and I was for a long time, and then I actually did my first year at Mills as an ethnomusicology performance major, but took enough electronic music, because I had been trying to sidestep for a while, and came back later and finished as an electronic musician. So that was my first both academic and, like, career sidestep from being an instrumentalist to being a producer, composer.
Right, and that was happening while you were a graduate student at Mills.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but you're still playing a little bit, and it's still a factor in some of your projects.
Yeah, I'm playing. I guess the way it factors in most right now is that it's useful in writing string parts when I'm writing strings for our multimedia pieces. Because my brother, so those pieces are co-composed. Me and my brother, who's also both a violist, he's actually, his day job is viola, or his career is viola, but he's also an electronic musician and records as Kelly Poehler. And so we both, originally he asked me if I would work on a piece and do all the electronics, and he was going to write the string parts and do the text adaptation. And then the more we worked on it, he was like, I'd really like to write some electronics for this too. And I was starting to get covetous of writing for strings again, so I think that's really where my violin is, where I use it practically the most is composing for strings now, which I hadn't done in a really long time, and it's fun. That's and fun. I do play a little bit, but not very much.
Right. So at some point, I guess it was during your time at Mills College when you went from being a violinist to being a full blown electronic musician, right?
And
and so you were you eventually in the recording media program, or whatever it is, the electronic music program
at Mills?
And that's where you met Kristen.
Yes. And my better half.
And it seemed, I mean, I have some memories of it, because I was still living in the Bay Area. I mean, I don't think we were students simultaneously.
But, yeah, because I left for a while and came back.
Close proximity. But I just remember that Blechdom from Blechdom just sort of seemed to come together really quickly. And just, I mean, I remember I knew Kristen actually pretty well at that time. And, you know, she was still playing Schoenberg piano pieces and, you know, struggling with all different kind of, you know, ideas, and then all of a sudden, you know, Blechdom from Blechdom just seemed to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it seemed to kind of totally engross both of you, right? And,
yeah.
And become a whole world unto itself.
So, yes. Yeah, that's true.
So I mean, I guess some of us know some of the history. We don't have to recap all of that, but you guys got pretty involved and made some records and won some prizes and toured the world, right? And did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
How long did it go on? I mean, I guess from the late 90s to...
Yeah. When did we... So we sort of took a break, like 93 maybe? So we had maybe like 89 to 93, 92.
Right.
And then we took a break. She moved to Berlin. She was like 19 when we started to play together. She's like 7 years younger than me. So she needed to go do her own thing. And she went and did her own thing in Berlin and put out some solo stuff. And then eventually we were back in the Bay Area. And so we have actually all play some of our new stuff. That's
right. So you're back together.
We're back together.
So how does that work? I mean, she's at Santa Cruz now, right?
Yeah, she's
and
in
you're
the
in
digital
province. So how do you conduct a musical relationship at this point?
Yeah, it's tricky, but it's slow, but it's steady, and we've actually gone and played shows together a bit off and on over the last 5 years or so. But I usually go out to, she was in LA for a while too, so I'd go out, work for a month, and then we work remotely. And she is sort of the head tech person at the Digital Arts and New Media at UC Santa Cruz, so she's a very busy woman right now, and I'm the one finishing the work. So I'm basically finishing things, sending it to her, because it's basically done. So we would work intensely for a month and, like, you know, do nothing but work on it, and then be away for a year and then come back. And,
nice.
So that's how it's been, which is not ideal, but. Yeah,
so when did you last make a record and do some shows before this new, you know, period?
We haven't had a record out since 2001.
That's
together.
Yeah.
A lot of solo stuff and a lot of, like, live stuff that hasn't been put out. But,
sure.
Yeah, it's been a really, really long time.
Yeah, I guess so. So do you have plans to tour or do some...
Yeah, I think we're going to finish it, put it out, hopefully... by this spring at the latest, and see what label it ends up and what, you know, what opportunities she has to travel or on top of her job. And
right.
Historically she was more flexible than me, but I'm flexible now.
Now
it's the reverse. And we'll definitely try to play some shows and make a new record.
Right. And what you made, it sounds like you made them. Do you have a, you don't have a label or publisher at this point?
No, we haven't decided. We haven't really approached anyone yet because we want to have a finished thing that's really finished before we start sending it around. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess we could maybe do it still on Tiger Beat 6, but I think we'd like to try something.
Tiger Beat 6 is still, still going?
I think it still is. I have no idea.
But that's where your very first record.
That's
came
where
out.
Our first.
I have that record, the Messy Jesse Fiesta.
Oh, that's actually on Deluxe, and that label is long gone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. And Orth Lorne, who put out our first Kit Clayton's label, that's also defunct.
Isn't that Tiger Beat?
Tiger Beat is Kid 666's label, and he's still floating around somewhere.
He's still floating around. Nice.
But I don't know if he's still. I think he is, but I'm not totally sure.
Well, that's great. But, well, so meanwhile, you've been doing a lot of your own stuff, I mean, in all of these intervening years.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of recordings yourself, and you've been touring around here and there, right?
Yeah.
I guess recently you were in Europe, right?
Yeah.
Doing some shows?
Yeah, I did a kids' concert in April at Gate Lyrique, which is a really amazing black box in Paris. And They asked me if I would bring my weird old paper horse costume that's sort of a horse head. Like, I mean, I've been using that thing for like 10 years, and they, I was over there and asked Ashley, an old friend of me and Kristen's, if she had anything open in Paris, and she was like, I don't now, but if you come back in April and do like multi-screen video and wear the horse costume, we can set that up. So that was fun. And yeah, that was exciting. And so then once I was there, I had played a couple, you know, once I'm there, I set up all the other shows I can stack around it. So I ended up playing in Berlin and Poland and a couple other places. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, it was fun.
And you're doing some DJ stuff here and there, or just for fun, or how does that fit into the whole? I mean, I know that's something you've done.
Yeah, I used to do it a lot. I haven't done it in a while, but I just actually played violin through disco strings over someone else playing records for a bike building ball, so stuff like that. I haven't DJed properly in forever, but I've been thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Providence is small enough and has enough parties that maybe I'll start doing it. I don't know. Right. I haven't done it in a long time, but that's what I was doing before I started making music. Mm-hmm. Way back, I switched from buying records to buying gear. That was like the mark. Mm-hmm. Like,
so you mean while you were still ostensibly a violinist, you were also a DJ?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of a latent interest that eventually just kind of took over.
Yeah.
And you went to Oberlin for a while, right?
I did.
That's where you did your undergrad.
Yeah.
Right? And they have a pretty big electronic music scene.
They
there,
do.
Right?
Yeah. I actually was only a violinist and an English major there, but I did. That's actually where I first started producing. Was on the radio station, like Free Studio. It's where I learned to mix on turntables, and it's where I started doing anything really of my own, because the actual electronic music classes at the conservatory are really difficult to get into and kind of impossible if you weren't a major.
Right.
But there was a lot going on musically there, in terms of like bands and electronic music and
classical
like audio collage and class music and jazz. And, yeah, so it was like the early 90s.
Right. A lot of great musicians. I mean, from what I gather, it's a pretty great conservatory.
No, it was inspiring place to be, and it was exciting. It was an exciting time.
Really. So then you got to the Bay Area. So, but you're originally from Providence, or in part?
Yeah,
I
was born in San Francisco, and then I have family up there too. But I lived in Providence from the time I was about 11 to through high school. So
when did you leave? So the Bay, you know, going to the Bay Area to study at Mills, and then Blackton from Blackton,
stayed.
And all the other stuff. Well, how long did you? When did you eventually leave the Bay Area?
I left the Bay Area, in 2008. Actually, and moved back to Providence.
Right. And then the Brown thing kind of came out of that.
Yeah,
just from being there.
No, I moved back for family stuff and needed a job, and Brown was. It's a paid, if any of you are looking for a PhD, it's a paid program.
Right. If you can get in.
But it's got its, you know, pros and cons, but I'm glad I did it, and it was a job, and it really, I had sort of quit music for a little bit before that and did work with birds in California. So it got me way back into, you know.
Uh-huh. Work with birds? Tell me about that.
Work with birds as a veterinary nurse.
So like pet birds, like parrots.
And zoo. It was like a bird-only practice in Northern California. And I have some birds left over from that past life. So I have an umbrella cockatoo that I adopted that make some ungodly sounds, speaking of.
And you have it with you in Providence still?
Yeah.
Wow. Did that involve any like rescue birds from oil spills or otherwise?
I did actually work at International Bird Rescue Research Center, which is probably the one that you know that's in. They started in Emeryville actually, and they have like multiple locations now. But I volunteered there for a while as part of my like bird stuff, and that they do some really amazing work with crazy creatures.
Well, I know there are different kind of incidents that happen along the coast periodically, whether it's oil spills or algae blooms or
mystery substances in San Francisco Bay. Did you hear about that?
I didn't. Tell me what was that?
It was a bunch of birds ate some goo. Like there was goo getting on birds, and they didn't know what it was. I don't know if they actually figured out what it was. It was some kind of dumped residue that was, you know, using what they usually use, getting crude off oil off birds, wasn't working.
Wow.
Yeah,
so there's a bunch of sick birds in the bay.
Yeah, that was in the bay. Wow, pretty sure. Yeah.
Wow, that's an interesting side career.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of bird recordings. Maybe not always, obviously, but in
your work.
Yeah.
It gets in there.
Yeah, it gets in there.
Excellent. Well, so tell us a little bit about what you have in plan for tonight.
I have.
A pretty tidy setup here.
It's a minimal setup tonight. Audio and video, new stuff, experimental. It's not very narrative, although there are some snippets of one of the radio plays in there. And there's actually this bank I can go in different directions. So. Mm-hmm.
So what are you working? What are you working with? What kind of tools? I mean, apart from the Mac.
Yeah.
And the Apple G and the
I really work in. Pro Tools, Ableton Live, and Max MSP, and then the Livid is relatively new, and you know, I have a lot of my own sort of self-created backlog of sound banks, and when I worked with Kristen, I had, you know, she had a black clamshell Mac with Max MSP almost barely chugging away, and I had the very first sampler I had, was like a Dr. Sample SP to it, like an old Boss sample, like very minimal and kind of not very good. But I worked, you know, those first records, we were just using Pro Tools free and like sampling everything just kind of randomly, like our own and anything else. So what I do now is like an extension of that, really. Mm-hmm.
And what about the video? What is that? How's
the video, actually, some of it is stuff I worked on with Ryan Junell, another old Bay Area person, for the Paris concert, for the kids' concert. And then, and we had our audio video band, Sagan.
But the video is all pre-done, or is it generally?
I'm going to be tweaking the video and the audio in varying degrees. Parts of it, the sources are more or less set, and then I'm tweaking them. But a lot of the pieces are interchangeable of what audio and video go together, and sometimes it's tightly synced, but it's a wide range. I'm using BDMX for the video right now, and it's work in progress and sort of like that's actually what they preferred for the Paris concert, so I've had a crash course in BDMX and so I feel like I'm definitely still a composer at heart that is learning a lot about video in particular, but I guess half of it I did and half of it Ryan did, what I'll play tonight, and you may or may not be able to tell which half. I'm not using old Black. I have some new Legend from Black Denim in progress that I'll play parts of. I have some of my new stuff that's a lot of. Yeah, I think I'm gonna try to play everything pretty much.
Right, so it's just gonna be kind of a continuous
or live versions of things
mix,
that
or,
have.
Or is it, it'll be sectional.
It'll be a continuous mix.
Right. Excellent. So. Apart from the reemergence of Blackdom, which we'll be keeping our eye out for, what else is going on? I mean, what's in the on the horizon for Bevan?
Well, hopefully this. So the project with my brother and the violinist Elise Cooter is called the Traveling Bubble Ensemble, and we're playing. We have two pieces done. The first is an adaptation of a Ray Bradbury short story, the second is an adaptation of a Philip K. Dick short story, and we're working on two more that are Brian Evanson stories, who's a local writer and teacher at Brown. So we'll have an hour's worth of repertoire. We're going to play that in Providence, and we'll probably play it in New York as well in January or February. And then we'll put out a recording of that, and then we'll probably tour for that. I'm trying to finish this solo thing that will be out on Darling Dada, which is a Paris label, a small Paris label. And yeah, some new Providence collaborations. Yeah. And
how's Providence? I mean you got the Bay Area, you got Providence, Oberlin, New York. I mean, what's going on up there?
It's good. For a small city, it's got a lot going on, a lot of like flow of people coming through for both academic and non-academic stuff, and it's very livable after the Bay Area, like,
right.
Easy, and Hasbro is based actually in Providence.
So you're doing like some sound for games and stuff like that?
Yeah, mostly for electronic toys, like the right. animals that make sounds and wiggle and light up and they'll kill me if I tell you any more.
Don't tell us. But this is another thread in your life, right? I mean, you're doing sound design stuff. I mean, who do you work for in the Bay Area?
Leapfrog was one of my first audio jobs.
That was like a multimedia software.
Like mostly alphabet learning toys for a kid. Like that at the time, they actually had like a talking, fake sort of book laptop too, right. That was pretty sound intensive. And Creativity, which is like did contract work for, or I worked for them after Leapfrog, and they
that
did.
That was another Bay Area.
Lots of toy sound in that area. Emeryville, right. Pixar right. went in next door to Leapfrog. I have not worked at Pixar. No, I tend to just,
So a lot of sound design stuff in theater.
Sounds
great.
Finished sound for a production of Salome in Boston. So that was like the Dance of the Seven Veils. Get to do music nice. For that, and I enjoyed working on theater. Is such a collaborative free for all, and when I'm used to working in the studio, like not talking to a human for several days, I enjoy the like. It is crazy, but I do on some level enjoy the
collaboration.
The collaboration yeah. and the constant back and forth of making sound for theater.
Excellent. Well, good. Well, it sounds good. I think. I think we're up to speed.
Everything now.
Pretty much. So, but we don't know what you're going to do yet. So we're excited to hear that. So. Well, great. Well, thank you for speaking with me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
For coming down
and joining
us. It's great
to be here.
It's our pleasure. So we'll take just 5 minutes to reset the lights and the stage. And
that was my conversation with electronic musician and multimedia artist Blevin Blechtum on Thursday, October 8th, 2015. The evening continued with a stunning audio-video performance. And let's listen now to the audio portion of Deviant Sonic Parlor Tricks by Blevin Blechtum.
Thank you. Oh, Mais c'est rugueux. Et puis c'est bien trop dur. Non, ce n'est pas un œuf. C'est une géode. Au lieu d'un moisillon, c'est rempli de cristaux.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. For more information, visit our website at musicalecologies.net.